Acts chapter 19. I'm going to read to you. About that time, there arose a great disturbance about the way. The way being one of the names of the people of Jesus, what you might think of as Christians. A silversmith named Demetrius, who made silver shrines of Artemis, he brought in a lot of business for the craftsmen there. So he called them together along with the workers in related trades and said, "You know, my friends, that we receive a good income from this business. And you see and hear how this fellow Paul, the Apostle Paul, the messenger of Jesus, this fellow Paul has convinced and led astray large numbers of people here in Ephesus and in practically the whole province of Asia. He says that gods made by human hands are no gods at all. There is a danger not only that our trade will lose its good name, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout the province of Asia and the world, will be robbed of her divine majesty." Now, when the people heard this, they were furious and began shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." Soon, the whole city was in an uproar. The people seized Gaius and Aristarchus, that is Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia, and all of them rushed into the theater together. Paul wanted to appear before the crowd. You remember, Paul always wanted to deal with these situations, have a chat, let people know why. But the disciples would not let him. Even some of the officials from the province who were friends of Paul. Remember, this guy was very controversial. He had lots of enemies and lots of friends in the most unexpected places. Even some of the officials from the province, they were friends of Paul. They sent him a message. It doesn't say if it was a text message or a WhatsApp, but a message begging him not to venture into the theater. The assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, and some, another. But look at this, my friends. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. Just think about those words, please. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. What were the Jesus people called at the time? We get it in the text. They are called the Way. And of course, it relates to Jesus' teaching when he says about himself, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." And so the name for this new faith, what we now think of as the Christian faith, was the Way. But were Demetrius and co interested in the Way? For sure, they were not. Demetrius and co were more concerned with financial profit than understanding the Way. Demetrius and co were more concerned with making a quick buck than accepting the truth. Demetrius and co were more concerned with just making loads of money than receiving the life that Jesus was offering them. They were fighting a losing battle against the Christian faith, but they still wanted to fight. Have a look, please, at verse 26. Look at what Demetrius says that Paul has said. Demetrius is reporting what Paul has said. And Demetrius quotes Paul by saying that he says that gods made by human hands are no gods at all. But what's interesting is that Demetrius can't then go on and prove that gods made by human hands are gods. It is as if Demetrius already knows that gods made by human hands are no gods at all. But for the sake of profit, he wants to continue making them anyway. For the sake of profit, because of selfish ambition, Demetrius misses out on what God has to offer him, and he leads lots of other people into confusion too. And then in verse 32, we read, the assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, some another. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. And I want to ask, does anyone want to guess why I have chosen this passage today, these words today, especially today? Because that's the whole thing, isn't it, about war. I don't want to be disrespectful in the suggestion that people aren't patriotic and so on, but so often in wars, particularly when war escalates, it started over here between these two countries, and then they got involved, and then they got involved, and then those and those and those. You have to be honest and say, when it gets to like a World War I, World War II size, loads of people are involved, and loads of them don't even know why they're there. And you think of someone like Romania that has to switch sides halfway through and so on, you know? What's all that about? As a child, when I went to Stag Lane Primary School, Stag Lane School, I don't know, 9, 10 or whatever, and you do history, don't you? And you learn about the First World War, the Second World War, and they taught me the truth. The war was all about England versus Germany. That's it. But of course, as you get older, you realize it's the whole world. I mean, as a kid, I never understood, why is it called a world war if it's England versus Germany? What's world about that? And then when you're in your late 20s, early 30s, and you live in Romania, and you buy some of those books from a supermarket, World War I in pictures, World War II in pictures, and still got them, you know, and you read through and you see this country, that country, everyone's just, it's just crazy. Everyone's getting involved. Think about the young men around the world who went to war. Did they know why they were there? Did they know who they were fighting? They might have known the name of the nation they were fighting against, but did they really know who they were fighting? I'm not talking about the country, but what about the actual other young men that they were fighting against? Because they were 18, 19, 20, whatever age they were, and they were fighting against other people from another nation, similar ages, similar hopes and dreams and aspirations, similar fears. How many of the young men on this side loved grandma and granddad? And they were fighting against the young men on that side who loved grandma and granddad. In Britain alone, 250,000 boys and young men under the age of 19 joined up and fought in World War I. That's a statistic I found just recently. What about all the other countries? And as more and more countries got brought into the mess, surely the confusion grew. and more of them surely did not even know why they were there. Not really. And as we've already quoted again, I mean, these numbers, do they mean anything? These big numbers. Of course, it's the small number. It's the mother, it's the father, it's the child, it's the uncle, it's the son, the husband. But numbers have some value. 9.7 million military deaths in the First World War. 10 million civilian deaths in the First World War. So we have to ask the question, why do we have wars? Why do we still have wars? Why are we still fighting? Why are we still fighting in our marriages? Why are we still fighting in our families? Why are we still fighting in our churches, in our workplaces, in our communities? Wars start small and they escalate. And I put it on the screen for you. Wars start in the heart and wreak havoc in the world. Wars start in the hearts of an individual, affecting individuals, a marriage maybe, or a family, or a community. Wars start in the heart of a dictator, affecting millions of people in their own country and in other nations too. And one of the New Testament writers, James, who writes the book called James, he asks a question and goes on to answer the question himself. He says in James chapter 4, What causes fights? What causes fights? What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You see, that's the point. It's not just on the screen. It's in Scripture. Wars start in the heart. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet. You want something that someone else has got. That's what it means, coveting. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. Of course, the tragedy is when you want something that you can't have that someone else has got, so you quarrel and fight. You don't get what you want, and you lose what you already had as well. Isn't that the tragedy? You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. I learned years ago to pray and say, Lord, the fact that you have given me more than I need is more important than the fact that you have given someone else more than you've given me. I had to embrace that when I was 20-something years old, living and working with orphanage kids in Romania, and other missionaries have got more than me. That's it, basically. Bigger, better cars, bigger, better flats, or whatever, you know. More resources. And I had to put it into prayer and say, Lord, the fact that you've given me more than I need is more important than the fact that you've given someone else more than you've given me. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet. And this can be on an individual scale, but this can be on a national scale as well. Yeah, going into another country to get their oil, to get their resources, their minerals, and so on. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you ask, you do not receive, because you ask with the wrong motive so that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. And you know what? This whole war thing, you know where the war started? In the most unlikely of places. It started in a beautiful garden, didn't it? It started in a garden. The war didn't start in the trenches. It started in a garden. when Adam and Eve decided to listen to another voice. When they decided to listen to another voice, to someone else other than God, their creator. And as is always the case, things went from bad to worse. These things escalate. And by the second generation, in the days of Cain and Abel, what had started out as disobedience and a little bit of what you might call innocent listening to other voices, which wasn't innocent at all, of course, it had led to murder. I guess that's the first act of aggression that we see in the Bible in terms of man killing man. Look with me, please, in Genesis 4, verse 1. Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant, and she gave birth to Cain, and she said, "With the help of the Lord, I've brought forth a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. So far, so good. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to me, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." But while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother and killed him. Now I suspect that some of you are thinking that's not fair. And I get it. And I can even name the people who are thinking it's not fair. It's not fair. Why did God accept Abel's sacrifice but not Cain's? I get it. I understand. And yet, let me say, God was talking to Cain. God said to Cain, "Why are you angry?" And Cain told him why. Now, you and I, if we're in this kind of a dilemma, we can go and look in the Bible. Cain and Abel, they couldn't do that, because they were going to be on page 3 of the Bible anyway. They didn't have the Bible, but they had living God talking to them, saying, "What's the problem? What's the fuss?" And God says to Cain, "If you do what's right, you too will be accepted." And I think it's time to stop saying poor old Cain because his sacrifice wasn't accepted, and to say, for goodness sake, when living God was right there, why didn't he humbly say, "God, touch my heart, teach me. What do I need to do what is right? God, you're saying to me, if I do what's right, I'll be accepted. Please teach me to do what is right. God, I want to do the right thing." That's got to be our cry as individuals. Within our marriages, within our families, within our church, within our community. We've got to stop making God out to be the bad guy because he didn't accept Cain's sacrifice. And we've got to say, look, God was right there talking. If only Cain had said, "God, there's still time to put this right. Just tell me, what do I need to do? Shall I just go and buy some fat portions for my brother? Do a bit of a swap, you know, with some of my grain or whatever, you know?" How many of you would love to see an end to war? Let's have a raise of hands, please. How many of you think that's likely to happen anytime soon? Wars will come to an end. when the end comes, when Jesus returns. But my friends, I'm not making light of war at all, but let's get it and let's understand the wars, they've been predicted, we know. Let me read what Jesus says in Matthew 24. Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah. If you've got satellite TV, you can probably find plenty of people that will say things similar to that. And they will deceive many people. Jesus says, look, let's be realistic about this. You will hear of wars. And you will hear of rumors of wars. But see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation. We saw it in the First World War. We saw it in the Second World War. We've seen it in other wars since. There will be famines and earthquakes. We see plenty of them too. Often, in part, brought about because of people or made worse because of people. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. You will be hated by all nations because of me. Isn't it true that the Christian message, the message of Jesus, is being marginalized more and more? The very people who brought compassion to our world because of Jesus, our world is now saying we're embracing compassion, but we're rejecting Jesus and we're rejecting the Jesus people. The very people who said, because of what Jesus has done, people need to be treated fairly and rightly and with love, with compassion. The very people who brought such changes to our world are the very people who are now being rejected. Our world is accepting the message of compassion in many ways, but it's rejecting the Jesus who brought compassion. Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith, and they will betray and hate each other. You only need to read stories of the communist times in Eastern Europe. We've been there for many years ourselves. People betraying each other. Believers. Many false prophets will appear and they'll deceive people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. Actually, we've been invited to take part in a battle, in a war, not a picnic. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel, do you see how gospel relates to war? This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. My friends, we have a mandate. Let's get this message out there, this gospel. And then the end will come.